there are so many roadblocks in the way for human flourishing. 4 people vote in favor of taking the 5th person's stuff. That does not, from first principles, make theft more ethical. So a popularity contest every 4 years is not really a moral high ground to claim why this or that tax is actually needed. Defunding government is the best thing you can do for humanity. That's what stops the wars. I am not convinced that a pro-Bitcoin president is actually preferable to an anti-Bitcoin one, because the anti-Bitcoin one forces people to stay anonymous and run their nodes. I think AI can be a perfect slave, but it can never be its own master. If we stay in fiat land, AI is just the Orwellian ever-stomping boot to the face. Because it has to look that way. If we're gonna keep up the illusion of ever-increasing prices, it will centralize money and power, and it will be awful. So I'd choose the orange way, please.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bitcoin News Channel. I'm your host, Rob Wallace, and today I'm very grateful to be joined by Knut Svanholm. He is an author, a philosopher, a former tall ship sea captain, and an avid musician. His books include Praxology, The Invisible Hand That Feeds You, and Bitcoin, Everything Divided by 21 Million. Knut, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Rob. Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Nice. I don't get asked that question that much when I'm on this side. I appreciate that. Yes. In the season of giving thanks, we are here celebrating Thanksgiving soon here in America. So it's usually a time of reflection, a time of looking back on the year 2025. And I think there were lots of hopes for Bitcoin in 2025, and some of those were accomplished and some of those were not. So I would love to get your opinion on the last 11, 12 months or so that have just passed. So first question is, what surprised you the most about Bitcoin in 2025?
Oh, that's a good question. First of all, I'd like to say that Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday that we don't really celebrate in Europe. My favorite American holiday, I'd say. I think people aren't grateful enough in general for all the wonders that the free market has given us over the centuries, and the reasons we can live such fantastic lives now as in comparison to our ancestors. I think whenever I'm on a flight, I'm super thankful that engineers thought about these things and I can actually fly from one destination to another. It still baffles me. Like I'm a romantic like that, you can say. I'm super grateful for a lot of things. What surprised me most about Bitcoin this year? I guess the whole core versus knots debacle is the thing that took me by surprise the most. I didn't expect that kind of internal struggle to happen. We can go deeper into that if you want to, but I know you want to touch on other subjects, really, and I have spoken about that too much already, so I'm sort of trying to stop talking about that for now, at least.
I hear you. And yes, it was surprising that we sort of had this mini civil war within Bitcoin this year. But it seems to be that when Bitcoin goes sideways, that's when the knives come out. When it goes up, it's us against the world. When it goes down, it's us against the world. But when things go, Bitcoin ranges, then everybody seems to fight amongst themselves. So then the opposite side of that question is, who do you think pushed Bitcoin forward the most this year? Who won the medal for that?
Oh, it all depends on what you mean by that. First of all, I don't agree with the statement that it has anything to do with price, really. I thought it was more a reaction to what has been happening since February 2023, when the spam really started to take off with all the ordinals and inscriptions and crap, right? And the philosophical debate and the technical debate, I guess, is more about whether something can and ought to be done about this. And that's where opinions differ. So I don't think it was something that was triggered by the price necessarily. I think this is a fight between more deeper Bitcoiners who are already so deep down the rabbit hole that they don't really care about price. This is for hardcore people. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, we can get into the technical and philosophical of core versus not later on, but just on, yeah. On a positive.
Or not.
Or not.
Yeah. On a positive. The thing is, I'd say the same thing. I think it's very positive that this is happening because yeah. I think it's sending me a signal that Bitcoiners are still vigilant and willing to take a fight whenever needed. And not just complacent and are not willing to just let anything pass, which is very, very welcome. I think every Bitcoiner should be happy that this thing is taking place. This was exactly the same thing around the block size wars. Everyone hated that the wars were going on, but in hindsight, everyone loved that they happened because they strengthened the entire system. Once they were over, and I believe this has the same effect in the long run. It's just when we're in the midst of it, a lot of old friends become enemies because they're on the opposite sides of the debate, and that's unfortunate. But yeah, we'll see.
And back during the block size wars, were you more an observer or were you an active participant, commenting and offering your opinion on what was going on back then?
I was more of an observer in the sense that I wasn't running my own node, but I was definitely commenting on it, and I wrote an article. My first viral article was about how you could get your hands on your own private keys so that you could sell the part of the fork that you didn't like when after the fork had actually happened. So that's the first article that got sort of semi-viral, got like 70,000 reads or something on Medium. And it made me write more. I got sort of encouraged by that, and that it was so few that knew, and so little content in general around how these things worked. So I kept on writing.
Nice. And so, yeah, I think that the majority of these 2025 questions will probably revolve around the core versus not. And that has definitely taken up a lot of the conversation in the last 6 months. But the beginning of this year was the inauguration of Trump, of course, and the first Bitcoin-friendly president. And so it seems as if Bitcoiners have gotten very cozy with the idea of Bitcoin and government. But you have taken a stand, as you always have, that Bitcoin is best, or government is best when it's as small as possible. And so, please, I would love to talk to you about the state of Bitcoin government and where Bitcoiners lie on the spectrum now. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if I am to compare Trump to Kamala, I'd say I prefer pneumonia to bone cancer, but they're both bad. so I don't particularly like any politician in a Democratic election. Trump is still, I would say he's more crypto friendly than Bitcoin friendly, which is very concerning. I am not convinced that a pro-Bitcoin president is actually preferable to an anti-Bitcoin one, because the anti-Bitcoin one forces people to do Bitcoin the right way and stay anonymous and run their nodes and use all the tools and develop new tools for self-sovereignty. A crypto-friendly president will just confuse and confuse people thinking that cryptos are okay and meme coins are a thing, and will also like make people complacent because now the government dictates what a node is. So I'm not entirely convinced that this is the better route. Having said that, I work with a couple of Bitcoin companies, and I've seen how they feel encouraged to do more stuff now that Trump is president. They don't care about rules and regulations in other countries and on other continents as much. And that's very, very good. American apps are developing faster because of the shift in government. So that's a positive, absolutely. I mean, in the long run, it doesn't matter. An idea whose time has come is unstoppable, and I think Bitcoin is such an idea. And we'll see how it plays out. But I'm not a Trump endorser.
Yes, I agree with you on that statement. Bitcoin does seem to do best when there is an outside force more exerting against it. It does seem as if we came into this year and had a bunch of wins, and it's sort of that same energy that we had back in 2020, 2021 during COVID and the lots of printing and the crackdown later in 2022 with Biden and his regime. It does seem as if there was more cohesion within the Bitcoin community when there was more external pressure against it.
Yeah, and that's very unfortunate. I'd say I don't necessarily view price as the best indicator of whether Bitcoin is doing well or not. There are other things to look at and more important things in the long run, more important metrics. Price will always have its volatility and go up and down. I don't think this latest dip is anything to worry about at all. For instance, I think it's just the market correcting. And this happens from time to time, and people always speculate it's because of this, it's because of that. But it's all a big guessing game. And the best advice I can give is still the same advice I gave 10 years ago. Like, sell your shitty money to buy the best money. That's the way you're supposed to play this game. And if you do, you win.
100%. So in a recent podcast you did on the Free Cities podcast, you were talking about that democracy leads to socialism, which leads to totalitarianism. I think that is a shocking statement to many people outside of Bitcoin, but is an inevitable conclusion when you come from first principles. So walk us through the chain of thought that leads to that conclusion.
There's a lot to it. Like first from first principles, if five people vote about taking, if four people vote in favor of taking the fifth person's stuff, that does not, from first principles, make theft more moral or ethical. It's still unethical. It's still theft, and it's still not the right thing to do. So a popularity contest every 4 years is not really a moral high ground to claim for why this or that tax is actually needed. Not if you're an individualist. And there's so much baked into this. First of all, I'd like to say that the real problem, the real bigger problem we have with democracies as they are today, is that they all have money printers, which makes the state immensely more powerful than it would have been had it been forced to just tax its populations. Because when populations are taxed too much, they revolt, and the politician has a risk there. If the tax is hidden through ever increasing prices, because some money printer goes brrr somewhere, then that revolt can be perpetually postponed. At least that's what it feels like in a modern democracy. Then there's so many other things. For instance, an election always favors collectivists by the very nature of collectivism, because a collectivist that cares little about what the party thinks about things, but cares more about belonging to a certain party, is by nature going to form a bigger party. Like if you're an individualist, and more disagreeable, if you will, as individualists generally are, then you're not likely to form as big parties. This is why Bitcoin is so chaotic and there are so many internal wars and stuff, because we don't agree. Collectivism and democracy is the opposite. Like the biggest party is the party with the most brainwashed party members. That's just how the nature of democracies. And I think they're highly immoral, and they always take credit for things that the free market did and the free market gave us. Democracy, the free market gave us, you know, smartphones and this type of video connection and all sorts of wonderful things despite governments hindering them, not because of government intervention. All governments did what was put up hinders in the way, and taxes and tariffs, for instance, it's such such a hinder. It's not good in any way, and pretending that it is not going to make it better. An American tariff, a tariff from the U.S. to China is not a tariff on Chinese goods is not going to make an average American worker less fat or more willing to work. That's not the effect a tariff gets. All that's going to happen is that China is going to sell their flat screen TVs to another country. So there's that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the question was about democracies. I think this is something that most people don't understand, is how left leaning how tilted towards the left a democracy really is. It's all based on theft, it's all based on ever increasing taxes, and especially since we have inflationary currencies, it's all predetermined to favor collectivists over individualists. Mm-hmm. Which is a left-wing idea. So I think it's very dangerous, and I think you're better off not worrying about that too much, but figuring out how to regain control of your life and take back the driver's seat and not have to worry about these things. And the more people that do that, in other words, the more people that use Bitcoin and Oster and all of the other wonderful things, tools we have, the better humanity is off, the better off humanity is, because defunding government is the best thing you can do for humanity. That's what stops the wars.
Yeah, and when it comes to democracy, there's so much of the we thinking, right? We know what's best for them. And you often say that the solution always starts with the individual. But of course, there's public school, and there's so much to indoctrinate people from a very young age that we need to think in terms of we and teams and us versus them. So break that down. Yeah. Is that just a natural part of humans and our tribal nature that we think in we versus them, or is there a hope that we can be more individuals in this new age moving forward?
Partially, I think it's a part of human nature. I also think people are more or less individualistic, and the thing is that it's very hard to see what's wrong with a system from within that system. So it's wrong to see the faults of democracy from within democracy. It's wrong. It's very hard to see the failings of the fiat monetary system from within the fiat monetary system. If we're measuring everything in dollars, then we never see the problem. And the main problem that humanity has is that it's the biggest lie ever told is inflation. Ask yourself this. If human beings practice doing things, do they usually get better or worse at these things that they're practicing doing? And of course, they get better. Everyone gets better if they practice, right? The follow-up question that everyone forgets to ask themselves is, so why aren't all prices dropping forever? And the answer is they are. They are falling forever, but only if you denominate in Bitcoin, which can't be printed more of. Then you can clearly see that all prices are dropping forever. If you're using fiat, on the other hand, all prices are increasing. And even stable prices would still be hidden theft, because they ought to decrease all the time. And only through Bitcoin can we see this reality, which was always true, by the way. We were always better off collaborating than aggressing against one another. And that's all that is. The aggression being when you involuntary or without consent have to give stuff up. So if you're stolen from, it doesn't matter if it's the taxman or a highway robber or whatever, you have to adopt a higher time preference, because you have less resources now. So you have to be more short-term thinking. If you have more resources, you can plan ahead longer. That's a lower time preference. It's the very basics of civilization. That's what makes human civilization. If Robinson Crusoe catches fish with his bare hands, he can only catch so many per time unit. But if he sets aside some fish, some capital and saves and has a lowers his time preference, he can build a net and catch, after the net is done, he can catch more units of fish per time unit. So this is low time preference. If we're being stolen from, we can't do that, especially if that theft is on a constant schedule. So we're getting taxed every time we buy something, every year, every time we sell something, like always. There are so many roadblocks in the way for human flourishing, and we're just blind to them because we have lived in this system for so long, and especially the inflation part, that we think that it's natural for prices to rise. It isn't. It's very unnatural. It's man-made, and it's made by an asshole who takes your stuff.
I wanted to briefly interrupt today's interview to give a big shout out to our lead sponsor, Rhino Bitcoin. Rhino is the all-in-one Bitcoin super app built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. Buy or sell instantly. Send sats anywhere on the Lightning Network. Withdraw straight to cold storage. Even turn sats into gift cards or link to a Casa multisig, all within one sleek interface. And Rhino is just warming up. Soon, you'll pay bills, borrow against your Bitcoin, and save for retirement, all without leaving the app. Download Rhino at rhinobitcoin.com or tap the link in the description below. Use promo code BitcoinNews and Rhino will drop you $10 of free Bitcoin into your account today. Secure your stack with Rhino Bitcoin and enjoy the rest of the video.
Yeah, and as time goes on, they need to take more and more to keep this this system going, right? And so how do you see it playing out? I mean, we've just hit $38 trillion worth of debt.
This is a scary part. Let me just double click on that. This has to accelerate because we get better at doing stuff at an ever accelerating rate. The birth of AI, for instance, made us extremely more efficient at stuff. Like for me to write a book 5 years ago in comparison to now is like nothing now compared to 5 years ago. I could churn out a book in no time because I have the AI tools and whatnot. And even if I'm rigorous with it, the process will be faster and it will be better. So we get better at an ever-increasing rate, meaning that the money printing will have to be worse at an ever-increasing rate as we go into the future, because that's the only way to keep up the illusion that prices are going up, mm-hmm. which they have to, because money is created as debt whenever it's conjured out of thin air, whenever someone wants to take out a huge loan at a bank, and it needs to be paid back with interest. That interest does not exist. It requires yet another loan to conjure that money up into existence, and so on. So it goes. So we're all on these hockey stick trajectories into hyperinflation. Every fiat currency hyperinflates and dies. It's either that or there's some form of reset. Like in Europe, the euro, for instance, is such a reset. When they see a lot of failing currencies all around Europe, they claim that they got this better thing, but it's just basically more of the same. And they put another inflationary system on top of the old ones that were dying. And it's going to happen to all the currencies, except one. The one you can't print more of.
And so do you expect states like in Europe to get more drastic in terms of their control as they need to up the money printer, create more inflation, and their ability to extract from the people gets harder and harder?
Unfortunately, I do. I've already seen it for the last 10 years. I mean, you Americans are now twice as rich in comparison to us as you were a decade ago. Like, you have double the amount of money, and mostly from just the euro losing value. Like, it's completely depressing to be here and see that play out. The good thing is that I'm already in the lifeboat. I'm trying to onboard as many of my friends and family onto the lifeboat, but not everyone is there yet. And living on a continent that is on a path, a very destructive path, is sad. And in Europe, the bureaucratic machine is very large and slow moving. I mean, all the countries have big governments, big taxes, and we have the EU on top of that. So it's very hard to see a way out of that, except if people take matters into their own hands and start using Bitcoin more.
Yeah, and people can now easily take their wealth and move it into Bitcoin, into a completely parallel system. But when it comes to voting with your feet, do you believe that it's those who get out first will be the big winners? Or do you think that standing your ground and staying where you were born, per se, and fighting for what you believe is truth is the better option?
Very hard to tell in the long run. I mean, for me, it's very tempting to move to El Salvador because of the way things are going in Europe. In El Salvador, I'm treated with respect. And here in Europe, I'm treated with suspicion, to say the least. So I do feel the urge to move there to where everyone is optimistic. And even though it's a poorer country than most countries in Europe, every vector is going up there and all the vectors are going down here. However, I still know that Bukele might not last forever. It seems good right now, but he may be overthrown or get some bad ideas at any point. You never know with these guys. Historically, Central American countries have been kind of unstable. So there's that. So it's sort of impossible to say if it's better to stay and stand your ground, or if it's better to leave and vote with your feet, as you say. A bit of both is needed. I mean, even though I might not necessarily want to stay and fight and sacrifice my children, I do want Europe to survive, and I don't want another war in Europe. I don't want any of these beautiful cities that are around here. It's still the most beautiful continent on Earth, and I want it to remain that way. Mm-hmm. So, hard to tell.
Yeah, and one thing I've heard you say is that to have Bitcoin really click, you have to understand that fundamentally government is not your friend. What do you think is the cognitive dissonance that keeps people from understanding that basic fact?
I mean, it's such a hard pill to swallow for most people, because most people have a high trust in institutions, and some of them for good reason, because they've grown up in countries that have been relatively stable for many, many decades, and where you were able to flourish and able to live better lives than your parents for a long time. However, it was always an illusion, especially after 1971, which Bitcoiners know why. For most people, it's a very hard pill to swallow that money was always a lie. And when you try to map Bitcoin onto your old worldview, it simply doesn't fit. It doesn't work anymore. And all of these products that are being built on top of Bitcoin and adjacent to Bitcoin, like strategic reserves and ETFs and stuff, it's nice that the boomers are trying, but this isn't really Bitcoin. Like, the not your keys, not your coins is not only true, still true, but it's also the most fundamental difference between Bitcoin and every other ownable asset. Like, you can't really own a Bitcoin, and you can't really possess a Bitcoin either. All you can do is remember a specific a secret. So whether that secret is a seed phrase, an actual private key, the location of a hardware wallet, or a passphrase, doesn't matter. It's still just a secret. Meaning that the important aspect of Bitcoin, in other words, the ability to move them, is all in our heads. So we have now something, a piece of property that dies with us and that lives within us. Like, you and I, Rob, are part of the same financial cardiovascular system. The reason we believe that the Satoshis, that we can act as if we own them, because we know that it's very improbable that someone else will have the same secret as we will. And we also know that it's very improbable that the system will change to such an extent that the 21 million cap will ever change. And the reason for that is the game theory that's built around, and the incentive structure. These are the only rules that in the world that were provably cheaper to follow than to try to break. It's very costly to try to break Bitcoin. So when we know all these things, we can act as if we owned our Bitcoin, and we can use them as appreciation for other people's goods and services. In other words, as money. And Bitcoin so blatantly pointed out to everyone that money never needed to be anything else than just showing a specific amount of appreciation for another human being. And that's so, it's so mind-blowing when you think about how deep that is, because the cliche I use in my talks is the Beatles were right. All you need is love. We just hadn't found the right equation for it back in the 60s, and now we have. And it's super simple. If human beings collaborated instead of aggressed against one another, everyone would be better off. We're better off if we're nice to one another than if we're dicks to one another. How fucking hard can that be, really, to understand? And apparently it's very hard, because we've lived in a world where you made more money being a dick, or being a semi-dick, or even an asshole. And excuse my French on this pod, but that's what we've been living in for a very long time.
Yes, and I mean, I love your philosophical takes on Bitcoin. My question for you, on a personal journey, were you always thinking like this, or did it take Bitcoin to be the final piece in the puzzle to really get this philosophical view of the world?
Yeah, I was always a bit of a philosopher, I guess, and a bit of a thinker, but I was never appreciated as one until I found Bitcoin, of course, and I. Writing about Bitcoin and talking about Bitcoin at all of these conferences and doing all these shows and interviewing people, all of that have sort of helped me distill my thoughts into the very essence of what this philosophy is. And I think the perspective is valuable to other people, so I'd like to spread it even more, because, yeah, and I like ranting about Bitcoin and philosophy and humans ought to be nice to one another. I like that stuff. It makes me feel good. I think that's a good thing for me and my children. First and foremost, for my children and their generation. And now I have, like, with all the tools we have today, I have all of the, 180 episodes of the Bitcoin Infinity show now, and the entire Bitcoin Infinity Academy, where we talk about every single chapter of every single book I've ever written and do a deep dive on all of them. All of that is recorded, and therefore all of my followers, like the generations after me, so they can laugh at this old dork who said a bunch of things, their ancestor. What better legacy could I even dream of? It's just, I'm very happy that I get to do this, and I feel very thankful. That's the word today, right? Since it's Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
Soon here. So, yeah, 100%. I feel very thankful that I happened to slid on this specific banana skid.
Yeah, and I mean, Bitcoin touches so many different aspects of the universe, life, math, philosophy, of course. And when you're writing a book like this, you touch on so many different aspects of Bitcoin, right? So when you're writing a philosophy book, how do you organize your thoughts? How do you put it all together? And how do you know you're on the right track?
Oh, that's a good one. I guess for the first three books, the answer is simple. I don't. So the first three books, including Everything Divided by by 21 Million, they're much less structured than Praxeology and The Inverse of Clown World. And a lot of the magic happens in the editing. I had good editing help on at least Sovereignty to Mathematics and Everything Divided. Independence Reimagined still holds its ground, I think. Just going through that on the Academy, but Clown World and Praxeology are in my mind on another level in terms of authorship. I really feel like a real author much more now than when those two are there. I'm very proud of them. How I structured, working with a good editor is good. Usually I spend more time thinking about the books than actually sitting by the keyboard and typing the words. Most of the work goes into just taking long walks and trying to find ideas that are good enough to pursue. That's the biggest thing. And also, I'm very interested in creativity in general, and because it's such a strange beast to try to tame. I've heard many explanations of it. Some of my favorites are John Cleese, who says that in order to be creative, you have to not only not be interrupted, but you also have to know that you're not going to be interrupted, which is why it's so impossible to be creative when you have notifications everywhere and you're on the internet. So you have to sort of separate yourself from everything else and do the creative process. Also, Trey Parker of South Park fame, who said aim for 95% perfection, not 100%, because if you aim for 100, you're never going to be done. If you aim for 95, then you can move on, and you need momentum. So never mind about the work in the past, just try to be better and better and distill and distill. I really like that. A lot of musicians talk about it like it's something outside of yourself and it's in the room. Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age said that whenever a fisherman catches a beautiful fish, they have to remember that it's the fish that's beautiful, not the fisherman. Also, like, the song is beautiful, not necessarily as a songwriter. Benny Andersson of ABBA said you have to be at the piano when the song is in the room. Like, all of these things, I really, they resonate with me because that's what it feels like to me to be creative. Like, when I'm in that zone and when I'm in the creative flow and when I'm writing, it feels like someone else is doing it. It feels like I'm just channeling something. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's the feeling you get when you really let yourself be creative.
Yeah, you got to be open to it, right? You need to let it come to you. We try to force so much in this day and age that it's really hard to, as you said, with all the notifications, yeah, distractions, to let that intuition and inspiration flow, yeah, through you. And you said,
and
that
also it there's another thing on that. There are many different types of books, and if you're writing a very specific book, then you can do the whole index first and line it out and just start writing chapter by chapter, right? But I really like, and Praxeology is sort of like that. My other books, though, are more stream of consciousness. I don't really want to know where the book is heading. I don't really want to know what the book is going to be. I want the book to reveal itself to me rather than the other way around. Mm-hmm. Because that, I love that process more. Like, I like figuring out what it is rather than planning out what it is. And I think a lot of people get writer's block because they think they have to decide what it is and then write it. And I'd say just write and just let your brain go wherever it wants to go and figure out what the hell it meant afterwards.
Yes, let it reveal itself. One interesting thing you said before is that you could write a book much faster now with AI. So in terms of your creative process, are you experimenting with AI and how's that going?
I can get a lot of help from it. And yeah, every author who says they don't is a liar, I assume these days, because it's so easy and it's such a powerful tool. The trick is to know when to not use it. And the trick is to when to tell it to fuck off. And that's same goes for Grammarly and all these other tools you have for spelling and grammar and whatever. It's easy to lose your voice in it, and that should be avoided at all costs, I think.
So the question I have with AI, so having used it yourself and experimented with it, a lot of people still say, oh, it's nothing, it's just a stochastic parrot, you know, it's just a chat box that will repeat back to you what you put into it. But a lot of others, including Jeff Booth, your good friend, thinks that it is going to absolutely everything, and we are going to live in a rapid deflationary future, and that the whole entire social contract is going to need to be rewritten. Are you a believer of that?
I'm somewhere in between those two positions. I think the AI can be a very, very, if not the perfect slave, but it can never be its own master. And that's the big takeaway, like, because humans have free will, I mean, objectively, we probably don't, because the synapse has to precede the decision in the brain. But subjectively, we have no choice but to have free will, so we have free will. We have to act as if we do. And we act because we feel uneasy in some way, shape, or form. And we imagine a state of the future in which we have used a certain means to reach a certain end. And we imagine that state of the future, that we will be a little less uneasy once we've used the means to reach the end. For instance, if I'm thirsty, I feel uneasy. The means is the water bottle and taking it to my mouth and drinking the water. And the end is feeling less thirsty. And I will reach that end and that state of less uneasiness once I deliberately pick up the bottle and drink the water, right? So that's the basic example of a human action. An AI doesn't have that at all. It doesn't have agency because it cannot feel uneasy. So it's never incentivized to do anything without a human being telling it what to do. And in the sense of a human being telling it what to do, it's no different from any other tool. So it's basically we're a monkey with a very, very advanced abacus. This is, by the way, another thought I have about Bitcoin and Bitcoin nodes and Bitcoin miners. A Bitcoin miner is just a fancy abacus. So the real miner is the guy who decides to mine Bitcoin and not the ASIC he uses to do it. The ASIC is just a tool. And every tool and every technology that humanity ever invented they all have the same single purpose, and it's to save human beings time. And AI is super powerful because it's a very multifaceted tool and can do a ton of things that will save us a ton of time. It can remove bureaucracy by simply doing it faster. So if we want to write a complicated legal contract, it's much faster to just tell Grok or ChatGPT to do it right now than to go to an expensive law firm and tell them to do it. Coca-Cola desk or not, the AI is faster than the best lawyer in the world. So, so in that sense, like, I think it will reduce the time it takes to do a lot of all the things, like even physical things, everything that has to do with coordination, which is everything in human society. The question is, will we adopt a monetary system that truly reflects that back at us, so that 8 billion people are working for 8 billion people and all prices falling forever, a world of abundance and freedom and all of these nice things, and also the riddance of the urge to own shit because it's all available at all times, so we don't really need frivolous shit. All of that beautiful stuff lies in this is the way, which way Western man scenario. All of that is the bright orange future of Bitcoin. If we stay in fiat land, AI is just more and more control and the Orwellian ever stomping boot to the face. That's what that looks like. Because it has to look that way. If we're going to keep up the illusion of ever increasing prices, even though we have AI, then that's what AI will lead to. It will centralize money and power into very few hands, and it will be awful. So I'd choose the orange way, please.
Yes. Another thing that AI is definitely going to change very quickly is education. You are teaching yourself. You've taught at Plan B Network, at the business school, correct? Talk about being a teacher and how you think that students should learn in this age of AI, when then a paper can just be written with a single prompt.
Yeah, first of all, what I hope will happen and what I think will happen to clever educational programs such as Plan B's one is that we're going back to a world where teachers are not mainly evaluators of the students that gives them grades and stuff, but that they are actually people you can talk to and that will tell you how to learn stuff, useful skills, which is what their original intention was. Nowadays, schools are just like, you need to go to this school to get this paper here to get qualified to do this and that. All of that sort of goes away with technology, inevitably. And I just see my kids do their homework and asking ChatGPT or Grok about everything. And, you know, I saw it today. My son asked a chemistry question to ChatGPT in English, and then a follow-up question with some Spanish words in the English sentence. And it gave him an answer to do the Spanish homework, even though less of the sentence was Spanish than English. So it's just figured it out. Other kids must have done it before. It was trained to do this. It's beautiful, and it sort of obsoletes all of this. The notion that you have to sit in a classroom and listen to a boring lady for 5 hours a day, that's just simply not true anymore. Everyone can learn whatever they want on the internet. That's already true. Like all of the basic subjects, maths and physics and stuff, there are countless resources and they're great. So go out and learn things. It's great. You can become MacGyver. Like, the people who do things and know things get ahead faster in life than people who don't. So it's all good.
Yeah. And one of the beautiful things about being able to go anywhere and learn anything is that different locations around the world can now experiment with different ways of being, right? And you have been lucky enough to see these places like Lugano, El Salvador, Madeira, these cultures that are really embracing Bitcoin. And explain to people who haven't been to these places what it's like on the ground to be in a Madeira compared to a Barcelona.
The vibe is completely different because there are Bitcoiners there, so there's optimism in the air there. So it's friendlier, and also the conversations you have with other Bitcoiners are usually less shallow, I'd say. You skip the small talk about the weather and how your car is running these days, and you get into... Hegelian philosophy and the expansion of the universe or whatnot in seconds, and I love it because I'm a nerd. But also, all the financial troubles you have go away because there are other Bitcoiners around, and the more they are, the more powerful it is. It's sort of like Metcalfe's law: the value of a communications network is equal to the square of its number of users, and that's very true for local Bitcoin communities because there's always a guy that has fiat. If you need fiat, then you can always solve it with sats. There's always a guy that has sats, and there's always someone willing to do whatever. That's it's much more well-oiled, and it's much more permissionless, and it's much better in every sense of the word. So I expect these things to pop up in more and more places, and I expect them to grow fast because these communities will be wealthier, they will be freer, they will be happier, they will be all the good things. Absolutely. I just hope that they won't be violently taken down by evil government agencies. So far, so good. Let's see how many Bitcoin mm-hmm. circular economies, as they're called, we see in the future. I have high hopes for them.
I mean, you've met Bukele, and you know the people who are who run Madeira, and so I'm sure they've talked to you about some of the difficulties that they've faced that the average person doesn't hear about. When a leader is trying to push forward a community like this, what kind of difficulties do they face?
I mean, this is funny because me being an anarcho-capitalist, everyone calls me a statist cuck now. Then when they saw the pictures of me having dinner with a dictator or whatever. I went to dinner with him. That doesn't mean I support him in everything he does and endorse all that Bukele does. Of course not. It's my second presidential dinner, by the way. The president of Madeira had me over before Bitcoin Atlantis. So that's interesting. I'm getting used to this stuff now, being a statist cuck. In El Salvador, Historico was fantastic. Bukele is doing a great job on many fronts, but the real revolution is ground up. It's not top down. Like the first wave of Bitcoin as money that Bukele tried to push on people top down Didn't really work. And the Shivo wallet wasn't very good. And people were rightly suspicious of the government and whatever they said. So they thought it was a big scam and whatnot. It took people like Mike Peterson of El Santa fame and everyone else doing great, Max and Stacy, everyone else doing great work in El Salvador to do the ground up thing and actually go in orange pill retailers and orange pill restaurants and whatnot to actually get some Bitcoin adoption going there. And that's the way to go. And the same thing with Madeira. The president there promised a lot of things, kept half of the promises at best. And then the real adoption was from Bitcoiners moving there, Bitcoiners visiting there, the whole sovereign engineering team being there, using Bitcoin all the time, and Andre and his team of Free Madeira people going around and orange-pilling people. That's the ground-up approach is much more real and it's much more efficient. So there's that. Presidential dinners are interesting, but that's not where my heart is. I want to be a part of the grassroots revolution rather than some top-down thing.
And I mean, you've been in Bitcoin for 8+ years now. Do you still orange pill people when you meet them? Do you still have them download a wallet and send them some sats? Like, what's Knut's method to orange pilling a newbie these days?
I mean, depends on where I am. Obviously, where I live, I try to stay a bit more low profile. Since it's different when you're in Lugano, when you live in Lugano, where everyone's sort of used to this now, or if you live on Madeira, it's not abnormal. If you're in a place where there aren't very many Bitcoiners around, that you sort of have to find them, and they sort of have to find you, and you can do that through all sorts of, I mean, Orange Pill app, for instance, which is now Club Orange. That's a way to find Bitcoiners, and that there are other you mean communities on Telegram or communities on Signal that you're in, and btcmap.org is great, where you can find retailers and whatnot and other Bitcoiners. So it depends on where I am is the answer to that. Mm-hmm. There are many people that I know, a lot of people that are much better on the ground orange pillars than I am. I think I'm better at like sitting here producing content here or standing on a stage somewhere than actually talking to cab drivers and such. That's not something I do super often.
I hear you. Well, what's amazing here in America, I mean, the Square merchants just got turned on, right? They can accept Bitcoin now. And so I think that gives a different level of incentive for us Americans to go out to our local bakeries and barbershops and say, hey, do you know that you can accept Bitcoin now? I mean,
yeah,
it completely changes the game when it makes it that easy.
No, and really cool. Americans in general are very open to just start a conversation with someone. You know, I come from Sweden where people, like, we didn't have social distancing because when people said you have to be 2 meters apart, then people were like, why do we have to stand so close? It's very, people are naturally loners in a way that they aren't in the U.S. I mean, U.S., I find people talking on the bus and stuff to a much larger extent than in certain parts, especially Northern Europe. Here in Spain, people are much more talkative, but Northern Europe for sure is more quiet than the U.S.
Yeah, I hear you. And so you are always on the global Bitcoin circuit. You're going to all the conferences. 2026 is coming up. What sticks out on the calendar? What events are must-goes, and anybody who hasn't been to a Bitcoin event before, why should they go, and which ones are the most important?
All right, that's a very good question. So, and there are so many to mention. 2026, I'm starting out by going to San Salvador in the end of January for the Plan B Forum there, which is a very good conference. It's the same one as in Lugano, but with a San Salvador flair, you could say. In general, a very good conference, very high level in terms of speakers and attendees. Nice nice venue, nice conference in general. Then there's what else am I going to after that? That's a good question. Yes, I'm going back to Dublin. I was in Dublin this year. So this year, maybe I should start with this year, the past year, what has happened. I went to first I woke up in New Year's Day in Miami after Sailor's New Year's party, and then it was Colombia. Great conference that's happening this year again. I'm probably not going this year, but it's a great one. I recommend it. Medellin, very good conference, Bitcoin Medellin. And then Plan B Forum, San Salvador. Then last year I went to Sydney, Bitcoin Alive. I'm only do that every 2 years because it takes 2 years for me to forget how horrible the flight is. But that's a great one. I've been to that twice. I can highly recommend it. The Australian Bitcoiners are great. The community is fantastic down there, and the event itself is fantastic. Then it was Ireland. Ireland was great this year. And I'm going back this year. It's bigger this year, I think 4 days. After that, I'm going to Madrid in May. Mad Bitcoin, a very good name for the conference. It's the first one, the first English-speaking one in Madrid. Looking forward to that a lot. After that, there's BTC Prague, of course. BTC Prague this year is... I'm going to that one. Don't know any specifics about that one yet, I'd say. This past year, I went to Miami after Prague and then to a conference in Alberta, a conference in Calgary. That was Bitcoin Rodeo, so that's a good one too. After that, at the end of the summer, there might not be a Baltic Honey Badger this year in Riga. Otherwise, I highly recommend that. But there will be a BTC Hell, and BTC Hell in Helsinki, the second edition of that will be slightly bigger than this was a conference that I helped co-organize with my business partner, Luke. And a fantastic event in the middle of Helsinki. We had like 800 attendees. It will be 1,500 this second year. This year it'll be in September 2026. So yeah, you should check that out, definitely. Biggest one in the Nordics. And after that, it's Lugano again, I guess. Lugano is usually at the end of October. That's always a good one. Oh, this year I went to Bulgaria and Prague before Lugano. The Bulgarian conference is a smaller one, but a very, very pleasant one. Very nice community of Bitcoiners over there. So if you have a chance to go there, sure. I mean, there's a ton of them, and I haven't even mentioned the American ones. You have a better finger on the pulse there. I didn't go to Amsterdam this year, and I didn't go to Nashville or Las Vegas last year because I'm sort of don't want to be in that camp anymore. I'm trying to avoid Bitcoin conferences that endorse shitcoins or shitcoin apologists or politicians. Not really interested in that. The one I have some FOMO for in the US is BitBlock Boom. Oh, and yes, I'm going to Lake Satoshi in Michigan in August this year. So that's the American one I'll do.
Cool.
That's also on the plate. So there's a bunch. We'll see which ones I bring my family to. High likelihood I bring them to America. We'll see. Going forward here, which of these come to be or not? I guess
you've got the schedule of a rock star, my friend. You're always
I am a rock star.
You are a rock star. Yes.
I became a rock star when I stopped trying to be one.
Funny how life works like that.
Yeah,
right?
It is. It surprised me more than anyone else. But speaking of Rockstar, we're going to do more of these Satoshi Rokamoto gigs, I guess. And we've done a ton of them now, and it's all great fun. In Lugano, we had a great crowd. We had like 2,000 people in the tent, and the mayor of Lugano introducing us and stuff. And the Nevermind, this version of Nevermind consisted of me and Luke and Samson Moe on second guitar and Marty Malmi on drums. Who's wow. Marty Malmi is the second guy who ever talked to Satoshi, and he's one of the best multi-instrumentalists in the Bitcoin space. And wow. It's so good. Yeah, I'm very happy to be just happen to be in the center of that.
And who's singing for you guys? Who sings for Satoshi Nakamoto?
I do.
You do? You're the main singer? Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. Nice. Dude,
so,
dude,
yeah, nice. And it's not only us, but Joe Nakamoto is often uh-huh. playing a bunch of post-punk songs, and I play whatever's necessary on those. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun at a lot of these events. And this was something that I never expected out of this Bitcoin world. But we have a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, as it's clear from what you just said, any continent, almost any country, you can find a large Bitcoin event and Knut might be there. So,
yeah.
Yes.
And also you can find smaller events, and these are almost yeah. even more important, because even though these communities are small, the thing is we're everywhere. We're absolutely everywhere on the entire planet. Every one horse town in Idaho has a Bitcoin community. There's a Bitcoin community everywhere, and that's and it is growing. It feels like it's slow, but you know, we're only in this very first part of the adoption curve. Really, you haven't seen anything yet. I expect Bitcoin to go extremely ballistic within our lifetimes.
And I guess the final question then is, in the future, decades from now, when, I mean, I think you have a certain feel about the word hyper-Bitcoinization, but when Bitcoin is more accepted and part of everybody's everyday life, will there still be a specific Bitcoin culture, or will it just be culture?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Like, who can say? I mean, there are already a lot of subcultures within Bitcoin, I'd say. And even within Bitcoin maximalism, there are subcultures. And yeah, it's very hard to tell what that looks like in a couple of years. I think the conferences will morph into something. Maybe they're not called Bitcoin conferences anymore, or maybe they are, but the talks are focused on... I mean, you could sort of already see that the talks are not only about Bitcoin anymore. They're about all sorts of things, because Bitcoin touches everything else, since it is money. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see. I think within our lifetimes, this is such a big change. So I think it'll take a couple of generations for it to fully materialize into whatever hyper-Bitcoinization looks like, which is just a... Every aspect of your hyper-Bitcoinization is extremely hard to wrap your head around. It truly is. So imagine, for instance, starting a company just to have your stack shrink a little slower. Because if you think about it, since it's capped, every stack will shrink. So you might start a company just to have it shrink a little slower. Still, yeah. even if it shrinks faster, you will still be richer because all prices will drop forever. And like all of these things are extremely hard to wrap your head around, because we never lived in anything even close to similar to it. So the grass is very green on that side. And yeah, I'm happy to be living in the time where and having a front row seat to this revolution. Yeah. I absolutely love that, of course.
Yeah, and to be in a position where people love to hear you talk about what you think about it, right? I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful time, and we're lucky to be here and witness it all unfold in front of us.
Well, yep.
Knut, thank you so much in this season of Thanksgiving. Appreciate you being on. If people want to learn more about you, your books, your educational materials, where should they go?
I'm Knut Svahn. I'm on X. That's my biggest feed, I guess. I'm also on Noster, primal.net/Knut. We have the Bitcoin Infinity Show and the Bitcoin Infinity Academy on our social media channels as well. The bitcoininfinity.com, you'll find the web shop where you can find all the books. We have a Black Friday sale. So starting from now, all the hardcovers are 21 euros and the paperbacks are 15 euros. So they're very cheap at this point. It's a big discount from the previous prices. What else? Yeah, we're doing a new collaboration with Fountain, if you're aware of them, the Lightning Network podcasting app. You can subscribe for, what is it, $5 a month, and you get early access to a lot of stuff and maybe some bonus content and all of this. We're trying to do all the things. It'll be good. A lot of good guests coming up on the Bitcoin Infinity show. Everything moving forward, full steam ahead. No real new book or anything like that right now. We'll see what happens. I have a couple of months to figure things out here before the whole conferencing gauntlet starts again. So I'm gonna relax and take whatever part I need to take in this Knots versus Core war as it progresses, and we'll see what happens. I'm optimistic, I'm hopeful, and I'm happy. And so should everyone else be.
Yes. If you're listening to this, you should be happy. You're in on Bitcoin, and we've got a bright future ahead of us. Thank you so much for tuning in. Knut, I'd love to run into you on the road. I'm sure we will at some point in 2026. And until then, everybody, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thanks for making it to the end of the video. If you could drop a like and a share, it would help in our mission to accelerate adoption. If you're looking for more Bitcoin Signal, join over 10,000 readers of our newsletter, Bitcoin News Weekly. Every Monday morning, we send out the biggest headlines of Bitcoin to keep you in the know in under 5 minutes. Links below in the description. Then come hang with us live every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern. We break it all down live on stream with a new guest, and you can add your two sats in the chat. See you next week.